Greetings and welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 141, coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling, getting you ready for a massive football Friday here on the Watchdog Network. You don't want to turn that dial, that is for sure. We got high school football tonight, followed by the Mountaineers on Saturday. Lots of football talk here on the network. You've heard it all day, you've heard it all week, and now you're going to continue to hear it throughout the weekend here. So thanks for joining us. Of course, the Cleveland Browns will be in action next Sunday, not this week. NFL starting next week. So good to have you back here with us on another episode of Better's Last Stand here. You can follow us at the Pine Room Studios, BLS underscore PRPs, where you can find the picks each and every week. And of course, watchdognetwork.com, where you can get the streams of all the games and this show and everything else that's going on the Watchdog Network here over the next several months as we are full scale into football season now. It is no turning back. High school football started last week in Ohio. West Virginia starts on Thursday, and or last night, if I may, for games that weren't really around here, but in other parts of the state. So let's get into it right now as we're going to talk plenty about week one of college football. We're going to hit on some soccer, of course. AFL is kind of off this week, but we got a little few things to wrap up before they start their playoffs next week. Tennis updates. We got some racing, all three racing circuits in action for the last time this year as the IndyCar series will come to an end this weekend in Nashville. Talk a little NBA. Big Three is in the books. Golf is in the books. So a few things shutting down, but football is cranking back up, so I'm sure everybody's going to be very happy about that. Let's recap what we did last week. It was, I would say, an all right week. We were up 13.82 units, so not awful, but not wonderful by any means. Golf-wise, we only gave out two golf picks. Sam Burns was the top 10, so that was decent. Tommy Fleetwood gets the job done finally, wins on U.S. soil, and makes it a good one to win. $10 million there at the Tour Championship. So congrats to him. I'm glad he did it. He is a pretty likable guy, so we'll see what he does here in the Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup coming up. That'll be the next golf thing we talk about here. There'll be some wraparound events here coming up over the next few weeks and some very, very low-end tournaments that no one really cares about unless you're really at the bottom of the barrel. But there's other stuff to gamble on a little bit better than that. So we'll talk plenty of Ryder Cup when it gets close. I still am very, very much interested in Europe as the United States named their players today. The captain's picks, Keegan Bradley, will not play. So I thought that was a little bit interesting. Not that he should, but I really wasn't certain that Colin Morikawa would make the team. I think he's had a really bad year. So I think the USA is very, very vulnerable. The Europeans, with the exception of Rory McIlroy, are playing very, very well right now. So I like Europe. I still do at a plus price. So get on them now. Not because I want them to win, because I just think they will at Bethpage Black in a few weeks. Losing week in the AFL, if you could believe it. I got my Gold Coast Suns shirt on as they punched their ticket to the finals. But it was not a pretty week. We were 7-10, 145 and 107, 58% since early May. So not bad. But we did cash a nice Suns to make the top eight at plus 240. So they won this morning to clinch their playoff berth, move up to seventh in the ladder. So congrats to the Gold Coast Suns. CFL 3-2 last week. NASCAR had a nice top five with Justin Haley. That was a 7-1 winner there. He finished third at Daytona. Ryan Blaney gets it done, comes out of nowhere. Not really, though. I mean, he started on the pole. He's always great speedway racer. He just stayed out of trouble the whole race, and you know, you didn't really hear his name a whole lot, and he made the run when he needed to. Chris Buescher finished seventh for us, so not a catastrophe in NASCAR, but not great. Big Three was not good. It was looking very, very, very good for us there, but it got away from us late. So Chicago leading by five. I'm thinking, oh man, I got a really good shot of sweeping these. Their plus points and the under hitting, and then they completely fall apart. A couple tough no foul calls on Montrezl Harrell. He went nuts. He lost his mind. They had multiple chances, stops after that to recover, and they didn't. And Michael Beasley and the 305 from Miami, they get the job done. And win the Big Three championship. So 29-16 on the year and Big Three 64%. So it was a good year there. Still a little chilly in soccer. 10-11 last week. We did cash all three wagers in that Liverpool match on Monday, though, including those bookings. We talked about how testy that could be, and it was. So Liverpool and Newcastle not liking each other. They Newcastle's best players is attempted to be bought by Liverpool. It's a little feisty. We had a red card in the first half, so that worked out pretty well. Horse racing, small winner. We were up $17.27, so that's $17.27. Sovereignty gets the job done as expected. He just destroyed that field. As I said, I couldn't believe that the people that were taking shots with a few of the other McAfee and then the one horse for Steve Asmussen, those horses had 0% chance of beating him. I don't care what the race style was like. It didn't matter. He's just so much better than them. It's laughable. And Sovereignty really might have won the Triple Crown. I can't say that for sure, but you know, things can happen in that second race of a short turnaround, so you don't know. But man, he's been great, and I'm very curious to see how he'll run at the Breeders' Cup. He's going to be the horse to beat again. It doesn't matter. One of the things that I liked about him so much in the Kentucky Derby is he had tactical ability. He could be close or way back, or you know, he didn't have to be a certain spot. He could be mid, he could be close, he could be back. He always still has the same kick, so it was nice. His cruising speed is so good, and he was very close to the pace here at the Travers, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter. He's just so much better. He destroyed those horses, and really, Junior Alvarado didn't even ask him to his fullest extent. So he paid $9.90 on the Exacta, which actually for $2 Exacta isn't terrible considering the price that he was. $11.45 on the Trifecta. That's kind of funny. Scotland runs in the Trifecta for us. He finishes second. That one paid out $97.12. So you can see the horse racing helped out a little bit, but we did invest money into that, so it wasn't as good as you know. It's not as simple as a $97 profit because you have things invested in there. So we were up $17.27, so to the positive, whatever. Moving on, baseball, the pendulum keeps swinging. Red Sox, just four back of the Jays. They're back. Last week they were down. Now this week they're starting to come back up. They're plus 550 to win the East. I still think they have a chance to do that. Toronto's bullpen right now leaking oil. A lot of bullpens having some problems. Phillies and Mets both acquire big-time closers at the break, and boy, there's been some massive implosions for these teams. And you have a lot of teams right now that are incredibly shaky in many areas of their team. Detroit, Detroit, Cleveland has been, yeah. I mean, not that they're on top of things, but they were kind of crawling back in, but then they went on a bad slide. This stuff's incredible. The Rangers, I think it might be the nail in the coffin for our Texas Rangers. Nathan Eovaldi likely out for the season with a rotator cuff injury. That's just devastating. I don't think they're going to have enough to be able to get in now. So that's a killer. I thought when they made some moves at the deadline, they were really going to be hot, and didn't work out. Reds 3.5 back of the Mets in the wild card. You just never know. These things with about 26, 27, 28 games left, some of these teams, I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I still think some of the teams are vulnerable. Maybe their schedule favors them, like the Cubs, and maybe they can stay afloat. But we shall see. WNBA playoffs approaching quickly. The Valkyries now in 7th place at 19-18. The Storm in 8th at 20-19. The Sparks in 9th at 17-17. The Mystics in 10th, 16-22. I think the Mystics are done. We talked about them last week. They're just too inconsistent. They have games where they can't score. They get off the bad starts almost every game. So the Mystics, they're a year early on their arrival. They will not be ready for the playoffs this year. The team that I'm interested in are the Sparks. We've been giving them out about making the playoffs. They got over their win total for us. We gave out a while ago. And I will say, the Storm, to me, looked very vulnerable. I watched them last night. They got manhandled by Indiana. And if you're getting manhandled by Indiana in their current form, you got some problems. And the Storm really aren't a team that's real banged up or anything either. I mean, they have a couple injuries, but nothing to the degree of Indiana. They got embarrassed last night, and I would say that the Storm, to me, are not a shoo-in to make the playoffs. They're in the 8th spot right now. They're 20-19. The Sparks are 3 wins behind them. However, the Sparks have 3 games in hand, including a game against the Storm. So Seattle, to me, very vulnerable. Seattle to miss the playoffs. This is a must bet for me. 10-1. 10-1 on them to miss the playoffs. I think it's very possible that they miss the playoffs. Very possible. The Sparks, like I said, they have 6 games left. And I thought the Storm's record or the Storm's schedule isn't that easy. They got to play at the Lynx. They play the Sky, which a game they should win. They play the Sparks, as I talked about, in a game that the Sparks are going to desperately need. They play the Liberty, and they play the Valkyries, all playoff teams. So I, after what I saw from the Storm, I think the Storm will be lucky to win one, maybe two more games, get them to 22 wins, and I think that the Sparks have a schedule that they could actually run the table and make the playoffs. So I think I like that bet. I think maybe Storm finished with 21 wins, and I think maybe the Sparks finished with 22 or 23 wins. So we're going to take a shot. We're going to go Storm to miss the playoffs. We already have a ticket on the Sparks to make it. Racing-wise, IndyCar, how about Rasmussen getting it done? You didn't expect this, but it is an oval track, so it opens it up to more drivers. Christian Rasmussen gets it done. He was good. He had five pit stops. His different strategy than the points standings leader, Alex Palou. But Rasmussen punches the ticket and cashes the ticket. Scott McLaughlin for us ran third, and Scott Dixon ran ninth. Will Power had issues, and that seems to be a common occurrence. Either he contends or he has issues, and this week he had some issues. So Nashville, the street course, this is the Grand Prix of... I don't know if it's called Grand Prix of Nashville or what it's called, but it's a street race in Nashville, not at the Speedway. Streets of Nashville, they call it. And we're interested in a couple of guys here. Kyle Kirkland, who led 67 laps here last year. He's 9-1 for Andretti. And then Scott McLaughlin, who is running, of course, for Roger Penske. He finished fourth here last year. I like his car. I think he's been pretty good. He was second here 2 years ago, led 25 laps. Kyle Kirkwood won this race 2 years ago, leading 34 laps. So I think those are the two guys to look at. McLaughlin at $6, Kirkwood at $9. Scott Dixon hasn't been great here, so I'm not going to play him this week. Not going to play Will Power at 12-1 either, so pass on them. Colton Herta won this race last year. The Andretti car seemed to be pretty strong, so if you wanted to throw Herta in there at 6-1 along with Kirkwood, that might not be bad. Pato O'Ward ran second, and Joseph Newgarden for Roger Penske was third last year. And Alex Palou, who has not been great here. He was third 2 years ago. Newgarden was fourth 2 years ago. Scott Dixon did finish fifth here 2 years ago. So I guess at 12-1, not terrible on Scott Dixon. I think he could still maybe run in the top 10. So maybe we'll throw him on the car. But that will conclude the IndyCar series for the year. Alex Palou, runaway winner of the championship in that. So no drama there. He already clinched it several weeks ago. On to the other open wheel circuit. The F1 boys are back in action. First time we've been back since the Hungarian Grand Prix when Lando Norris beat us 36 laps led on pit strategy. Oscar Piastri almost tracked him down, finished second, and he couldn't get it done. Isaac Hadjar ran very well for the Visa Cash App Red Bull team. So I thought he is a guy that is worth looking at this week to maybe have a top 10. He's a young driver. Top 10 at plus 135 for Isaac Hadjar. I'm going to take a shot with that. Fernando Alonso also has had some good runs here in the past. I'll be taking a peek at him. I found him at just a touch into the minus. He finished second here 2 years ago and was 10th last year. So a top 10 for him. You can almost find plus money on that if you hunt around for Fernando Alonso, the old crafty veteran. As I said, Lando Norris was the winner last time out. He won this last year. Max Verstappen won it 2 years ago. Oscar Piastri has not won at this course. He finished ninth 2 years ago, and he was fourth last year. So we'll see. I got to check some qualifying and see how these guys practice too, because after the summer break, you just never know what's going to come back. You have seen in the past times where these cars are totally different out of the summer break as the engineering groups got something figured out during the break time. So that is possible. You can't rule that out here. But nice to have one last weekend of full card racing. And that will conclude with the Southern 500 from Darlington, the cookout Southern 500 from Darlington on Sunday night at 6:00. So good race there. Last week, as I said, Ryan Blaney was the winner. He gets the victory lane at Daytona. Daniel Suarez, Justin Haley, Cole Custer, Eric Jones, the top five. Kyle Larson, Chris Buescher, Ty Gibbs, Josh Berry, Chase Elliott rounding out the top 10. Some guys I'm interested in here. Denny Hamlin, of course, 5 wins, but he's 6-1. Can't play him. Larson's 5-1. Can't play him. Ryan Blaney, plus 550. Not going to play him. William Byron had the best car here back in the spring. He led 243 laps. He did not win the race. So that will be a little bit of a concern, but he's going to have a good car here. But plus 550 is just so short. I actually wish he would qualify poorly, so maybe he could get 8 or 9 to 1 on him. Chris Bell's the first guy I'll be interested in, 11-1. I thought his third place run here in the spring was pretty strong. He didn't seem like he had the best car, but it was good enough. He also finished third here at the Southern 500 last year and led
just one lap. So how about that? He finishes third back-to-back races at Darlington, leading just one lap. That is not something that you see very often. You would think if a guy's going to run up close to the lead like that, he's going to lead some laps. Well, Bell hasn't. So maybe if he could put it together, that tells me that his car isn't even perfect yet. So they're still working on the car. So I like his chances at 11-1. I thought Ross Chastain was very interesting here as well. He's had some very good runs here at Darlington in the past, including his last two, where he was seventh last or in the spring race, and then he was fifth in the fall race last year, that being this race, the Southern 500. So Ross Chastain, he also had an 11th 2 years ago in the spring race. So Ross Chastain, to me, very, very good. He was fifth at the Southern 500 2 years ago. So there's four straight top tens for Ross Chastain that I just named right there. He's 20-1. That's too big of a price for him. We'll take a shot for sure. Chase Briscoe's won here, but 11-1, can't take it. Tyler Reddick, lots of turmoil going on with the Michael Jordan, the 23-11 team right now. They seem a little distracted to me, but Tyler Reddick hasn't been great. He's plus 650, too short of a price. Chris Buescher has had some very good performances here. Back-to-back top 10s. We'll go with him at 20-1. Ty Gibbs. Now, this is usually a track where the veterans kind of thrive, guys who've been around for a long time. But Ty Gibbs definitely has the inside track to knowledge, being Joe Gibbs' grandson. He's got access to some of the best drivers on the circuit over the last few years. So Gibbs at 40-1 to me looks pretty good. And then Eric Jones, he's won here two times. He's 80-1. And those are recent wins. Like, those aren't like buried like years and years and years ago. Like, Eric Jones has run very well here. He, Brad Keselowski, Kyle Larson have all won here recently, as well as Chase Briscoe and Denny Hamlin. So Eric Jones at 80-1 is a little bit too big of a price, and we will take a stab with him. This is a track where if you run well here, it's like Richmond. If you are a guy that likes this track and your style suits it, you can do very well here year in, year out. Now, sometimes you can't escape the old Darlington stripe type stuff where your tire blows and you smash in the wall. That'll be hard to avoid. But, yeah, I still think Eric Jones is a guy that's a very good driver at this particular track. So we'll go with Jones, Gibbs, Buescher, Chastain, and Bell is our top picks. I was considering Keselowski in around 18-19-1. I just don't know what he's got left. We keep picking him. He's just, nothing's panning out for old Brad. Brad K just can't get it home. I was hoping maybe last week he could punch a ticket to the playoffs, but it did not work out for him. Tennis-wise, we got the U.S. Open going on right now. I have all my U.S. Open future picks up at the BLS_PRP Twitter spot. A few upsets already. Madison Keys, who were kind of a person we were fading. But the Mboko girl, the Canadian, who I did have in there for one of my quarter wins. But I prefaced last week on the show, I did not know how she would handle this coming back where she is now a target. She was not going to fly under the radar here. She's coming out. This is a major, the first time she won that big tournament in Canada a few weeks ago, and the stage was a little big for her, so she bowed out pretty early on. And so far, relatively formful, I would say. No massive upsets. Other Madison Keys is a pretty big upset, but nothing. Diana Schneider, another girl who just won a tournament, seems like some of the players who have played deep into tournaments right before the U.S. Open were a little worn out, and this the atmosphere around a major of this magnitude can really, it can take a lot out of you before you even get to the court. So I think that's something to watch as we go on. Sabalenka wasn't super sharp. As I said last week, she hadn't been playing great tennis coming in, but she's just so good. It's hard to see her not being able to at least advance into her quarterfinal matchup, I would guess. But Swiatek looked robotic, but she's going to beat everybody because she doesn't ever gear down. That's the one thing about her, that she'll burn herself out. She'll play the same against the worst player as the best player. And that can kind of mess you up as a player, in my opinion. But then again, when you're doping, there's really no way to measure that or how tired you actually are when you're likely to be using performance enhancers. But Swiatek right now the favorite at plus 195, Sabalenka at plus 285 to win it. Coco Gauff struggled last night. Tom Janovich pushed her to the brink. She won 7-5 in the third set. She didn't look very good to me. She really hasn't recovered probably from the French Open, that big dramatic win where she benefited from some poor performances by Aryna Sabalenka. She's kind of not recovered from that. Rybakina looked pretty good in her first match. Mira Andreeva looked great in hers. Naomi Osaka, who I'm not a fan of, but I said last week her form is coming back, and she looked very good in her match last night. Jesse Pegula won today. Emma Raducanu's playing decent. Barbara Krejcikova, didn't expect her to win her first match, but she did. Amanda Anisimova, I think, will get beat. Karolina Markova struggled against Venus Williams a little bit, but she starting to round back into form. Emma Navarro, not sure how far she can get. Looks like she kind of hit the wall. Jasmine Paolini has been great over the last month. I keep looking for her game. She's 50-1 still to win this. So some good names to keep an eye on. None of our futures have perished yet. Maboko is the only one, and that was not one that we were absolutely expecting to take us very far, but that was more of a hedge bet than anything. Men's wise, Yannick Sinner still the even money favorite. Carlos Alcaraz +175. I think Ben Shelton's still going to be a little bit vulnerable. Novak Djokovic had that little foot blister injury. He's probably still going to be okay. Zverev looked very good in his match. Taylor Fritz, so-so. Andre Rublev played pretty well. Demon Orr played well. Holger Rune played well. But we'll see. It's a little early. Again, no massive losses yet. Nobody gigantic out on either side. Karin Khachanov played well, settled in. Tsitsipas finally gets a win for the men. So we'll keep an eye on it. If you want more, if you want to buy in on those futures that we have, get over there, BLS_PRP, and you can still get them. So a couple more weeks of the U.S. Open that we can follow, and that's very exciting because it's fun. It's nice to have it on during the daytime, and you got something to watch. All right, bad beats for the week. This one hits close to home for a lot of our Pine Room guys. I know Nick and some of the boys had the over in the Iowa State-Kansas State game from Ireland this past Saturday. Iowa State kneels the ball three times on the one-yard line to win 24-21, keeping it under that 51.5, 51, whatever you got it at. Tough one there, but they did the right thing. They made sure that they could not lose the game by doing that, and they get the win. So win for Iowa State, keeps the game under. A lot of people disappointed with that one. Idaho State, 25-1 on the money line. Oh, they got beat 38-31. They were a 30.5-point dog to UNLV. And really, their quarterback was horrendous. He turned it over four times. If he doesn't do that, they win the game outright. So tough one. I bought in on Idaho State with the spread, but I didn't buy in until midway through the game. I got them at like 11-1, and man, I still feel like I should have had a shot of winning that, but the quarterback was really bad. Stanford and Frank Reich, this guy, numerous blunders late in that game, probably cost his team a chance to win against Hawaii, but Hawaii pulls it out 23-20 on the Big Island. Industry news and notes, Malik Beasley no longer a target of the federal probe, so he is off the hook, the Eastern District of New York said earlier this week, and he's going to be able to return to the NBA. And then this is starting to get very, very common here on the show. We talk about scandals and players being implicated in potential investigations. And here's some other things, though, in the world of gambling. So the NCAA and Venmo, yes, that's the pay agent Venmo, are teaming up to combat abuse and harassment of college athletes who continue to receive unwanted requests for money from losing sports bettors, as well as being solicited for inside information. Like I've said before, if you do this, you should be banned from Venmo. You should be banned from your sports betting app. You should be banned from gambling of any kind anywhere in the United States. And I mean that. It's ridiculous to harass people. It's ridiculous. It's not a joke. Like I was just joking. You can't go find somebody's. These are people too. You can't just find somebody's Venmo handle and then go start asking them for money. Research shows, and this number seems way off to me, research shows that 20% of online abuse directed towards college athletes is connected to betting. I would think it would be 80%. I don't know what are the other 80%? You stole my girlfriend? Like, I'm perplexed by that number. That seems very, very low. It seems like all harassment has something to do with either boyfriend, girlfriend, or money. And I don't know, to me, but I will say one thing. As I said, if you're doing this to somebody, you're an idiot. But I do find it funny is the NCAA has made sports betting, you know, they kind of are shunning it, but they're also making their players be paid now too. So that kind of makes it even worse because you got these people asking for money on there because they know these guys have money now because they're making more than professional players. So there's always ramifications from when you make decisions like that. So paying these players as much as pro athletes, maybe not the best idea. Not excusing the conduct, though. NFL, they make a statement that league personnel, team personnel, as well as players and staff are prohibited from trading or investing in predictive markets such as Kalshi. And we've talked about Kalshi on the show before. It's basically like a stock market for sports betting. So if you want to buy stock in the Las Vegas Raiders, you put a position on them to win whatever, to go or advance to whatever juncture you need to get them to, wins, divisions, playoffs. You can invest it like a stock, and you can sell off of it when the stock's up. Say the Raiders start out 5-0, you could sell the stock for more than what you bought it in for, and then you could go put a position somewhere else. So it's like a stock market. So they are preaching against that. It's not considered sports betting. It's actually regulated by the federal government, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC. So remember that. This is a federal overseen trading operation. So trading sports, just like stock markets. So pretty fascinating stuff. And it may be the wave of the future, if you ask me, for people who are a little bit more outside the box thinkers than your basic caveman sports bettor tends to be. In addition to that, Robinhood Derivatives LLC, if you're familiar with that, it's a stock app where you can buy stocks. Basically free trade, buy and sell. I've used Robinhood myself. It's a very, very nice platform. They will launch a predictive market hub too on their app. So they're already on their existing app. They're going to do it for college and pro football. And the NCAA responded with a statement saying they're concerned with the integrity of the game and its student athletes. So again, the NCAA, I come back to it. You've created a little bit of this problem yourself. FanDuel also announced that they've reached a predictive markets deal with CME, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So this is really becoming a hot thing. You're seeing all these big companies getting into this. This is the wave of the future. Obviously, the stock market is a massive thing in our country and our world. And sports, why wouldn't they be traded just like business stocks? So you're going to see more and more of that. And it is a fascinating thing to keep an eye on. DraftKings announced that it is banning credit card deposits effective this past Monday. So no more credit card deposits on DraftKings apps, after they were fined by the Massachusetts Gaming Commission for allowing deposits, especially from outside states. I know they got cracked down very hard on them being based in Massachusetts. The average point spread of college football has dropped to 10.44 last season. That was what it was last year. The lowest in 40 seasons, and continues a trend of dropping over the last six seasons. That number has diminished, meaning there's more parity. These games are getting a little more even, at least from the bookmaker standpoint. And obviously, the number one thing in my mind that rings the bell right here. Why do you think that happened over the last 6 years that it's went down? Wow, the transfer portal. Amazing, huh? That started in 2018. Well, that's when it started. These lines are now the average line. You know, the average line several years ago might have been 18, 19 points. It's down to 10. So that's how close these games are, because players are going like free agents to the next team, to the next team, to the next team, playing for three, four, five different teams till they find a spot. So obviously coincides with the transfer portal, which is really harming the game quite a bit. Arch Manning continues to be the Heisman favorite. 6-1, he's the most written tickets and the most money bet on him. So 15% of all Heisman bets going on Arch Manning. Alabama, more money on them this week at MGM than any other team, spread-wise, and they're number two in ticket count. So they're getting a lot of tickets, and they're getting a lot of money. So that tells you, maybe some sharps, but a lot of public on Alabama. So, could be a problem. Largest Super Bowl liabilities to date so far. You got DraftKings. They're in bad for the Raiders. They took a $250,000 bet this week to win $2.5 million on the Raiders at 100-1. And then you got a $10,000 on the Raiders to win $1 million. The Bengals at MGM, $50,000 at 20-1 to win $1 million. For them. So fascinating stuff there. Ben Fox, we talked about him last week. He had some of the biggest sports bets that he did an article on for Yahoo Sports. Well, this week he polled a bunch of bookmakers and got the 32, all 32 quarterbacks, projected starting quarterbacks in the league, and what they mean to the point spread value. We talked a few weeks ago about Josh Allen, Mahomes, Jackson, Hurts, and for whatever reason, Burrow, I don't agree with that at all, because the fall off the Jake Browning was very minimal if you actually go back and look. They're the top five, the bottom five. Spencer Rattler, Daniel Jones, Michael Penix, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. Oh, the Steelers, their former quarterbacks. No surprise there. So check that article out. Pretty fascinating stuff. Reminder, we got football coming up tonight right here on the Watchdog Network. You're not going to want to miss it. WKKX will feature Wheeling Central and Union Local in a battle as Central kicks off their season. Union Local won their first game last week. Parkersburg South in Wheeling Park over at Wheeling Island Stadium. That one will be on WatchdogNetwork.com only on the stream, so be sure and check that out. And then John Marshall hosting Marietta. That one will be on WVLY. All those coming your way here after our pregame show, which follows us right here on Better's Last Stand. So stay tuned for the pregame show, followed by three wonderful high school football games. Again, Wheeling Central and Union Local on WKKX, Wheeling Park and Parkersburg South, streaming at WatchdogNetwork.com, and John Marshall and Marietta on WVLY. You can find all those games at WatchdogNetwork.com, each assigned to their particular station that I went over there. All right, time for some football talk. We got some time left here. We got about a half an hour, and we're going to talk a little football. I guess we'll start with the round football, the kind of football that I like a little bit better than the pigskin type football, and that will be the English Premier League and maybe the lower leagues, although the lower leagues are not treated as very well at this point. So a couple games to keep an eye on. Chelsea against Fulham, that's another London derby. Chelsea manhandled West Ham last week in a London derby, so maybe they keep it rolling here. I like them. I think minus 0.75. Chelsea, very good talent level right now on this team. João Pedro is going to be really good, along with some of the other guys they have, Neto and obviously Cole Palmer. So I think Chelsea probably wins this game 2-3-0, 2-3-1, something like that. Minus 0.75 for Chelsea. Man United and Burnley. Manchester United, abysmal. I've backed them in the last 2 weeks. I can't back them here. I like this game under. Burnley's a defensive fortress. That's what they do. They did win last week. United has no attack prowess at all. They're pathetic. So we'll go under three in that match. Spurs and Bournemouth. Spurs, team we're keeping an eye on. Obviously, we talked about how we like them from a futures standpoint. I hate that team, but they are playing very well, and they're very talented. I like this game over. I think there'll be at least three goals in that game against Bournemouth. Probably lean Spurs, too, at home, maybe even minus 1.25. They could win this game like 3 or 4 to 1 type stuff. Bournemouth, we documented how they lost several of their key defenders, including their two center backs and one of their fullbacks, and then the other one about to head out the door here soon. Wolves and Everton. This looks like an under to me. Don't love it. If you can find a three out there, obviously jump on it. If you find a 2.5, probably still. Everton playing pretty good. They're going to be very formful. They're not going to give up a lot of chances to Wolves. Sunderland and Brentford. Sunderland, very good at home. Can they do the job here against Brentford? I don't know. Brentford has been very sloppy, but they've been a little bit better than people have thought. I'm going to go with Sunderland, though, and we're going to go over three in this matchup. I think that you'll see Sunderland be a team that you're going to be able to back for some goal scoring. Now, last week we played them under because they were out on the road at Burnley. But when Sunderland is playing at home, I think they're going to be a team that you're probably going to say, I could probably see myself getting this game over, because Sunderland is a team that plays really well at home, and they have for years. I mean, since they were last in the Premier League, they've been very good at home. So we'll go Sunderland and at plus 185. I think it's a very good price. Thought it was weird Brentford was favored there. Sunderland's going to be a 30-40 cent difference from home to away. So we'll go with Sunderland at home and over three. They spent a lot of money too in the offseason. Leeds and Newcastle will go under three there. Newcastle on a hangover after a bad loss to Liverpool. Not a bad loss. I mean, they were down a man, came back from two goals down, but they get beat in stoppage time. Just devastating. Brighton and Man City, don't know what to make of that one. I'm going to pass on that game. Nottingham Forest, I will take against West Ham. West Ham's a team that I think is going to be in maybe in the bottom five or four of this. We talked about how bad they are. They have Jared Bowen and literally nothing else. They're a really bad team. So I like Nottingham Forest. They've been pretty good so far. They've been playing in Europe. We'll take a shot with Nottingham Forest, minus 0.75. Liverpool against Arsenal, big time showdown there. I think both teams will score here. Arsenal brings in a big time striker. Liverpool's obviously got very good players. The youngster that just scored the other day in dramatic fashion against Newcastle to be won. And I'm going to go with Liverpool, though, plus price at Anfield. I also like both teams to score. A team that can't score, Aston Villa. We've backed them 2 weeks in a row. They cannot score, probably under here in Crystal Palace and Villa until they can get it going. Three games I like in the championship. We'll just go right to them. Like Middlesbrough, plus 120 against Sheffield. Very good goal differential for Middlesbrough. I think they've only maybe surrendered two goals in either 4 or 5 games. They've been very, very stingy, which is good. QPR gave up 7 last week. They take on Charlton and the Athletic. I think you'll see some more goals here, so we go over 3 in that one. And then Stoke and West Bromwich. Stoke's been a little bit of a surprise. They played very well. West Bromwich also pretty good. We'll go with both teams to score in that one in the England Championship Division. AFL, as I talked about, not really anything to discuss here. The Gold Coast Suns are in, but I can't give you the playoff rundowns. And I didn't have lines on these games yet, so we'll keep an eye out. They start up next Thursday, so keep an eye on BLS underscore PRP is where you're going to want to go to find the matchups, or at least what I like in the matchups, because I can kind of tell you where I'm leaning, but I'm not sure of these numbers. I would speculate on the numbers, but I'm not really sure. So anyway, let's go right to it right now. The qualifying final matchup. So this is a little bit different than most other places. The top 8 teams make the playoffs. One and the top 4 get what is called a qualifying final. So they actually will have a shot. They basically get a double chance. If they lose their first round, they will drop then into the other side where they will play the winners of the 5 through 8 matches. So the Adelaide Crows, who were the top team in the league this year, they are the 1 seed. They take on Collingwood, the 4 seed, on Thursday. And then you got Geelong, the 2, against Brisbane, the 3. What a game that might be. Two phenomenal clubs right there. So Adelaide and Collingwood, that will be at Adelaide on Thursday. Geelong hosts Brisbane on Friday. So whoever wins Adelaide and Collingwood will then drop down to play in the bottom bracket against the winner of, I believe it'll be the high, I think they reseed these, so depending on who wins them, so the opponents will be to be determined. So most likely, if I was going to guess, I would say that the Crows will probably be probably a little bit over a score and a half, maybe 10-point favorite against Collingwood in that match, maybe a 163-4, something like that total, but probably might lean towards Adelaide at home. They're going to be pretty good. Collingwood's just been so banged up. They just haven't looked great on offense. Maybe an under there, although it's been tough to play Adelaide under. Geelong and Brisbane, this could be the game of the year. Maybe they'll play twice. You never know. But Geelong, I would imagine, is going to be around a score favorite against Brisbane. Maybe a high-scoring affair, maybe in the 170s. And then you got GWS and Hawthorn, the 5 and the 8. And the 6 and the 7, Frio against the Gold Coast Suns. You have the shirt on representing right now. I'll probably be playing the Suns there. I'm curious to see if the Suns will be a dog in this game. I do like GWS at home. That crowd is going to be so fired up. And I think that you'll see a really good performance out of GWS. Frio has been they've been struggling, but Gold Coast has to make a long trek over to the Perth area to take them on, so that might hurt them a little bit. But I think Gold Coast, even though they had to play the extra game, I think they're gonna be ready. They'll probably be a double digit dog in that game, so they'll probably take the points there. So check out BLS underscore PRP, and I will have all of my picks for the playoffs, the first round of the finals, coming up next week. All right, rolling along here, Better's Last Stand, getting you ready for high school football tonight on the Watchdog Network. And if you're listening here on the at the Pine Room Studios or on our YouTube page or wherever you get your podcast, remember, you can hear the full show, go back and replay it, listen with your friends, make fun of my picks, whatever you want to do, but pass Better's Last Stand around. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to your podcasts, get on over there. BLS underscore PRP, give us a follow there. Check out all the plays that we give out each and every week. And we will continue to try to make it worth your while. All right, let's run through the college football card here. Probably not going to go through every game, but and it's tough because I don't have the add-on games yet, because you got your West Virginias and these other teams that play these garbage opponents the first week. So you won't have a lot of that. Plays that I gave out last week that was early on: East Carolina, Buffalo. I played the Central Florida, Jacksonville under. Jacksonville State, that is. We're playing the Buffalo Minnesota game over. Those were games that happened last night, so be ready for those. If they were good, hopefully they were. If not, then maybe they're not. Kennesaw State, Wake Forest, that game tonight, that is a 7 o'clock kick. I like the under 51.5 in that matchup. They also have Auburn and Baylor, that a Friday night matchup. Baylor Bears catching 2 at home. 57.5 is the total here. This is the first road game for Auburn, a first true road game for Auburn since 2002. Well, I don't think it goes real well for them here. I like Baylor. Now, I do think Auburn's going to be okay. They got a pretty decent roster. I'm not sure about the coach. Dave Aranda had Baylor playing pretty well at the end of the year last year. I was a year late on them. So we'll go with the Baylor Bears plus the two at home. Though I'm a little worried. A lot of people on them at this point. UNLV, saw what they did last week. They were dreadful against Idaho State. The Bengals should have won the game. This is the first ever meeting between these two teams. Sam Houston State catching 10.5, that is, against UNLV. 61.5 is the total. I'll be taking Sam Houston here. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the game. They weren't too bad last week against Western Kentucky. We did have Western Kentucky. That was one that we cashed here on Bettors Last Stand. But I thought that Sam Houston State was pretty decent and might be sitting on a decent year for a up-and-coming program. Texas and Ohio State, the game of the day, the game of the year, the game of the week, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, a lot of interest here on this network. Several Ohio State fans here on the network. We have family involved in this. My cousin Jake, of course, playing tight end for the Buckeyes. So, all that aside, this is a revenge angle spot, I would say, for Texas. You got quarterbacks, question marks on both sides. You got Sand starting for Ohio State. You got Arch Manning, the Heisman favorite, starting for Texas. I mean, Arch played some, so he's going to be a little bit more comfortable in this atmosphere, I would imagine. But Sand is playing at home, so that has to help. This thing opened around 3.5 or 3. It was there all summer. It's down to 1.5 last check. So lots of money coming in on Texas. I've heard most professionals that I've talked to or heard from, they're on Texas here. They just think Texas has the better club, maybe the best defense in the country, and just Ohio State has got so much to replace to be ready so quickly. They still think Ohio State would be very good, but first game, very tough. Texas in a revenge spot. I like the under in the game. I think Texas's defense is very good here. I like the under 47.5. It has went down. I bet this is when it was around 50. So if you want to get in on it, I can't highly recommend it, but I do still like the under. I wouldn't want to go too much lower than 47.5. And I get where they're coming from with Texas. I mean, it's a strong play, I think. From my perspective, we'll just go with the under and hope my cousin scores a touchdown in the game. And it's a good ball game. That's what we got to hope for. Syracuse and Tennessee. I gave Syracuse out weeks ago, around 17 plus 16.5, all the way down to 14, which is interesting. But I'm hearing a lot of people on Tennessee, so I don't know. I'm confused by this. It's kind of like some reverse line movement stuff, but I did see this thing way back. Was it 12? So it's been up and down, a little erratic. I'm concerned about it now, but I'm still riding Syracuse. I already have the bet in. It's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, so we'll see. Still think the Orange will be decent, and I don't trust Tennessee. They lost a good bit last year in coming off of a bad performance in the playoffs. Northwestern at Tulane. Northwestern has upgraded their quarterback, that is for sure, and I think that you're going to see Northwestern be, I don't want to call them, I'm not going to say they're good, but they might be a little bit sneaky. They got Preston Stone. He's from SMU. If you remember him, he had almost 3,200 yards and like close to 30 touchdowns back in 2023. So the offense for the Northwestern Wildcats should be a lot better. They're catching 5.5 here at Tulane, 12 o'clock kick on Saturday. I like the Wildcats. We'll be on the Wildcats plus the 5.5 on the road. Another game at noon on Saturday, Florida Atlantic and the Maryland Terrapins. We talked about Maryland, thought they're going to be a little bit better. Their talent was way better than their record last year. They opened a 17-point favorite. They're down to 14.5. Florida Atlantic's getting a lot of buzz for their new coach in the offensive tempo. Well, I'm going to go, I still think Maryland will be decent. I'm not laying 17 or 14.5, but I'm going to go over here. It's 16.5 is the total. It's a little high, but that's what it's supposed to be. It's high for a reason. Florida Atlantic, high tempo. Maryland has some really good offensive playmakers, so we'll go over the points. We'll over the total, though. 60.5. I like it. I think there'll be points. Both teams should drive up and down the field. Ball State and Purdue. Yeah, what a game. Purdue now 18.5. That opened 16.5. The reason I mention this game, I don't love anything here. Obviously, it's hard to love Purdue. Ball State, though, 3-28 against Big Ten opponents all time. So, do with that what you feel. Purdue maybe has to get one of their few wins. It might come against Ball State. Toledo at Kentucky. Kentucky minus 7.5. Total 48.5. This game opened 11.5 all the way down to 7.5. If you're Kentucky, you got to be a little concerned. Now, I am seeing that Kentucky did win the only prior meeting 38-24 back in 2019. Some people on Kentucky here, that would worry me too. I've seen a few of the touts given Kentucky, so maybe you want to run the other way when you see that. But they were a 11.5-point favorite, now down to 7. But I saw right before I came on, I made a note that it went back up to 9. So some money coming in on Kentucky on the other side of that. That's what makes this stuff fun. Up and down. It's been sitting at these numbers all summer, and then we've seen drastic spikes back and forth. Moving along to another game we had here on Bettors Last Stand several weeks ago. It was Temple, now -2.5. They were a +1.5, +2 dog to start it off against UMass, and now they're -2.5. So let's keep riding it. Let's keep going with the Owls. 47.5 is a total, no play there. Marshall at Georgia. Talked about this one briefly last week. At least I thought I did. Maybe I didn't. Marshall +39.5. Georgia is 1-8-1 in their last 10 as a 30-point favorite. The days of them crushing these teams is probably over. Marshall lost their whole roster to Southern Miss. So tons of new players. You don't know what to expect. I think both teams are going to be breaking in a lot of new players. Georgia, obviously, with a different caliber of talent. I can't lay 40. Even though it's between the hedges, I mean, maybe you play Marshall team total under, something like that. That might be worth a look when they start posting those. But I thought it was interesting. 1-8-1 last time they were laying, last 10, they were laying 30 or more. Nevada Wolfpack at the Penn State Nittany Lions. Penn State 44, 56.5 is the total. Nevada has been shut out the last two times they played Big Ten opponents. Might happen here. Right now, they're team total, which I was interested in, they're -220 to the under. So if you want to take a shot, maybe Nevada only gets 3. Maybe you play, if you can find it, Nevada no touchdown, something like that, to get a little bit better price than -220. Probably Penn State in this game rolls it. Penn State offense, I think, would be looking to make a statement. The total, Penn State's defense is like an NFL defense to me, but man, their offense might actually be pretty good. I think they're going to be trying to get this offense clicking early in the season. So playing the under on the game total is a little concerning to me because I can see Penn State winning this game like 55-3 and then going over by a couple points. So we'll see. Maybe I'll do a little bit more digging into that and see what happens. BLS underscore PRP, I'll have all these posted for you Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I guess, this week. Alabama Crimson Tide at Florida State. This was a worry to me. Alabama 4-1 in the series. They lay 13.5 here on the road at Doak Campbell Stadium in Tallahassee. 50.5 is the total. I'm high on Alabama. I think they might be the team to beat in the SEC. But the thing that worries me is that everybody's picking them in this game. So that is always a concern. I just don't know what to expect. It's the first game. Is Florida State going to be as bad as they were last year? I can't imagine that they're going to be as bad as they were last year. But I'm not really a Norvell guy. I think he's a good coach, but not great. This is a whole different ballgame playing against Alabama. So I lean Alabama in the game, but probably not going to do much with it. Maybe Alabama first half for old time's sake. Coastal Carolina and Virginia. Virginia -11, the total 58 in this one. Virginia gets a North Texas quarterback transferring in who put up some really good numbers, but Coastal Carolina also has a good quarterback coming in. So I like the over in this game. Both teams getting good transfer portal quarterbacks to help boost the offense. 58 is the number, and we will go over 58 in the Cavs and the Chanticleers. El Paso, UTEP, and Utah State. Nothing really on this, but there was some line movement. Utah State -3.5, now up to 6. Both those teams not expected to be very good. LSU, Clemson, this is a tricky one. Clemson -3.5 in their version of Death Valley. 57.5 is the total. I really couldn't figure out what I liked in this game. Brian Kelly's been awful in these early season games. His team seemed undisciplined and just way out of sorts. So this is actually the first time that these teams have met in a regular season game. Of course, LSU winning the national championship against Clemson a few years ago. I really want to play LSU in this game, but I can't find a good enough reason to do it yet. Maybe the over. There could be some points. I think both teams' defenses, LSU's had a propensity to give up points early in the season. So maybe they can score a little bit. Clemson, I think, will be decent with Klubnik back on offense. So we'll lean to the over 57.5 in that one. New Mexico, the Lobos, traveling to the Big House, take on Michigan. Michigan 34.5, the total 49.5. New Mexico is 0-7 in their last 7 road openers. So that's ATS. So not good. I think Michigan probably crushes them. It's probably something like 41-0 or 41-3. I don't know. So I'm going to probably lean the Wolverines here. I don't want to see that get any higher than 34.5. Georgia State and Ole Miss. Ole Miss -35.5. The total 60.5. And listen to this. Ole Miss, they love beating up on cupcakes the first week. Their last 2 years in the home openers, they've won by a combined 146-7. So that ought to tell you Ole Miss is not going to go off the throttle here. They are going full force, especially because they break in some new guys now with Dart and lots of other guys going on to the NFL. So we'll lay the points with Ole Miss there, although I'm not real wild about laying 35.5. In this case, we'll make an exception. Moving on down the card, Georgia Southern and Fresno State. This one was one that had some line movement. I wanted to mention Fresno. Saw them last week. Not impressive at all. -1.5 they are now a 2-point dog to Georgia Southern, so that makes sense. Arizona hosting Hawaii. We gave this one out weeks ago, back when it was around 10 or 11. We gave out Arizona. They're up to 17.5 now. So I'm on the Wildcats here. I still think they probably will cover that. They can't be that bad. Hawaii was really sloppy, although they do have a game under the belt, so you never know. But hopefully you got the Arizona back when it was 10 or 11 here that we gave out a few weeks ago on BLS. Cal at Oregon State, former Pac-12 matchup. Oregon State -1.5, the total 50.5. California has been considering dropping football. So I don't know if that's a good thing for your program when you're talking about it with your players. Like, well, we might drop football. I don't know if that just, you know, injects the program with confidence. So I would lean Oregon State. Corvallis, one of the most miserable places to play. I've heard that firsthand from several players who have played up there. And they said it is like nothing that you ever experience anywhere. scary place to go, Corvallis. So we'll take the Beavers at home against the Cal Bears. Utah and UCLA, tough one here. Everybody on Utah. I have been suckered in on Utah a few times. They got the quarterback that they wanted. They got a transfer quarterback coming in from UNLV. I think it was UNLV. Is that right? So no, I'm sorry, New Mexico. Devin Dampier. We talked about him a few weeks ago. I don't know why I said UNLV. But Devin Dampier comes in pretty good. But UCLA, I think they're going to be a lot better. I think UCLA, they got the quarterback from Tennessee coming in. Not that he's great, but he's efficient. I think both teams have good QB play here. Utah's laying 6 on the road. That's a lot. I think UCLA, I'm not saying they'll win this game, but I think they'll score a little bit and keep it close. So 51.5 will go over that UCLA and Utah on Saturday night. Also a late Saturday night game, Colorado State in Washington at Washington. Washington -21.5, total 54.5. Sharp money on Washington, and it is coming in pretty good. It's now up to 21.5. As I said, it started at 18.5. So I'm going with the Huskies too. I got in right when it was at 20. So hopefully you can find a 20 out there, maybe a rogue 20. Colorado State, not expected to be very good in what is looking like a very bad league. Virginia Tech, South Carolina, both these teams are question marks to me. Virginia Tech, I don't know if they can get over the hump. South Carolina, I think they take a little bit of a decline, but they do have a better coach. They're laying 7.5 at home. I'm passing on this game. I don't know what to do with it, but I guess I kind of lean South Carolina, but I really don't love Virginia Tech in any capacity. So, and I hate them actually, but in this case, they just had a guy get in trouble with DUI, one of their captains. So there's a lot of issues going on in Blacksburg. And then you got Notre Dame and Miami. This one on Sunday is 7:30 kickoff. Notre Dame, 2.5-point favorite on the road. This is another one, very mixed. 92% of the money right now that I'm seeing at most books are on the Irish here. Now, I've been telling people all summer long that Notre Dame will kill Miami in this game, and being a Miami fan, I think I'm pretty realistic about them. I just don't know how you can turn a defense around that quickly. Now, they did bring in 5 defensive back transfers from pretty good programs in the portal. So, obviously, Cristobal Ball has done a great job recruiting. He gets players there. But what happened last year? They couldn't figure out the players, like, what to do with them. Because was their defense that bad? Was it the scheme? Was it the play? I don't know what it was. Now, they do bring the DC in from Minnesota. I think that'll help them a little bit. I'm not saying they'll be as bad. But last year, they were all-time bad. Like, beyond imagination terrible. So do I think they'll be that bad this year? Probably not, but I don't think they'll be very good. So I kind of like the over in this game. I've heard people touting the under, but Carson Beck's a proven commodity, and if he has any type of chemistry with his wide receivers, one thing Miami does is they bring in usually pretty good skill players. They lose a lot, but they bring in some guys that they're very high on. So I think Beck will be able to move the ball. And I think Notre Dame will move the ball on Miami. Notre Dame will probably hit some big plays. I'm not sure what Miami's secondary is going to look like. I think if you're getting under 50.5 points here, I would go over. I think there'll be points in this game. I could see this being like a 37-31 type game that Notre Dame probably wins. I don't want to say that, but I feel like Notre Dame is probably just, their program's in a better spot than Miami. Miami legitimately hasn't been good since probably 2002. And that's taking it from somebody who's watched like all the games and follows the program. I mean, we got to quit pretending that this is the same program, because it's just not. And even though Cristobal was a part of some of the glory days there, he hasn't been able to duplicate that on the field yet. Yeah, he's got some good players, but the team part of it is missing. They should have been a playoff team last year. They screwed that up with the Georgia Tech game, then losing to Syracuse. I mean, yeah. So anyway, I lean Irish here. My heart says I hope Miami can beat them. But and Notre Dame has struggled there. You have to say, if you go back and look at the numbers, it is not pretty. Notre Dame has not played well every time they've went to Miami. So we'll see. TCU in North Carolina rounded out. Belichick catching 3.5, the total 56. I don't know what to think about this game. I would lean to the under just because I feel like he's going to ball control things and be very careful his first game. 56 just seems like a lot of points. And then one other add-on game, a game that I saw. The add-on games aren't all in. Stephen F. Austin in Houston, sorry, over 55.5 was another play. Anything I like in those games, I will add as well, BLS underscore PRP. So check all those plays out, and we will hopefully get off to a decent start. So I'll recap them real quick. It'll be Wake Forest and Kennesaw under the total, Baylor plus the points, sorry, Sam Houston plus the points, Texas and Ohio State under, Syracuse plus the points, Northwestern plus the points, Toledo Rockets plus the points, Florida Atlantic and Maryland over the 60.5, Temple Owls now minus the points, originally plus, Penn State, Nevada team total under 7.5. Yeah, that one's a little bit weird. Coastal Carolina, Virginia over the 58, Michigan minus the 34.5, Ole Miss minus the 35.5, Arizona, that was an early play, minus 10.5, now up to 17.5, Oregon State minus 1.5 at home against Cal, Utah and UCLA over 51.5, Washington minus 20 against Colorado State, and Notre Dame and Miami over 49.5, under North Carolina, TCU 56, and over Stephen F. Austin and Houston at 55.5. All right, so those are our plays in college football for the week. 1 week out from the NFL. Couple of notes just before we wrap things up here on the Bettors Last Stand, 141st edition of it. If you got fantasy drafts this week, yeah, you probably have studied up and started to look over who's your go-to guys. Just a few players that I'm pretty high on right now. I've talked about Jordan Mason a bunch over the last few weeks. I think him for the Vikings, like, I realistically think that guy's going to have probably 8 to 10 to 12 touchdowns this year. So I would say take a shot with him later on in your draft. I think he's going to be extremely good. Judkins from Ohio State is getting a lot of Henderson. He's getting a lot of hype. I think it could be real on him. He could be a breakout star. Guys I'm not real high on, obviously, your top guys, Jamar Chase to me is the best player in the league. He's without question the best player of the week. I don't care if Burrow plays or not. He can put up the same numbers with Jake Browning. I have no worries about that at all. Bijan Robinson, to me, way overvalued. Bad team, questionable coach. He's way too high. Barkley, probably get hurt. Wasn't hurt last year. Lamb, probably put up great stats. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be great. Jefferson is going to be very good. Henry, Nico Collins, Brian Thomas, I'm massively high on him. I think he's really, really good. And then Malik Nabers, boy, he's really good. You got St. Brown's, great. Not real high on Genty. I think he's still a little bit of a question mark, but they will run the ball a lot, so he's going to get a lot of opportunities. But guys that I was really high on, I talked about Mason for the Vikings, Brock Bowers for the Raiders. The guy's a transformational player. He is exceptional. He's just going to catch a ton of balls. I don't know if you saw the stat, but the Raiders, I think they played every down in the preseason and 11 personnel was the one back and the one tight end. So they're not double tight end and they're not doing any. He's going to be on the field like every play and he's going to be the focal point of that offense. Bucky Irving going to be a very good player. Achane for the Dolphins is a really big concern. This guy's got some nagging injuries. He's had a lot of issues. Stock on Say's boy, what the hell's his name? Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State. this guy, he's going up the in the back rooms of fantasy football. Ollie Gordon is ascending up the ranks pretty high. So if keep an eye on him, he could be a dark horse guy for the Dolphins who can end up taking carries. Kyron Williams for the Rams will be very, very good, I think. Chase Brown, a guy for the Bengals who's getting all kinds of love. I'm not sure I'm on board with that. But those are some of the guys that I'll be looking at. There's so many quarterbacks that you can't take a shot. And to me, the best advice that I would give to people that are new to fantasy or haven't played for a while is don't take players on bad teams. It just doesn't work out very well for you. How many guys are you going to draft on these? I mean, there are exceptions, though, because I will say, like, Brian Thomas is an exception. Malik Nabers was an exception last year. But, I mean, those are the only guys on those teams you could take. I mean, you can take the Giants' defense. In Jacksonville, maybe a few guys this year, but not a whole lot out there. But don't waste your time taking bad quarterbacks. What are the guys for the Jets going to be like? What is Garrett Wilson going to be like with Justin Fields as his quarterback? I would be very worried about that. That's why I was high on Breece Hall from a PPR standpoint, because I think he'll have a lot of dump off passes to Breece Hall. But I don't know. But fantasy football is here. I'm sure a lot of you have had your drafts. Many more will have theirs this week. I have a couple of them next week. Can't wait to get them over with because I'm not a real fan. If you haven't checked out Guillotine Leagues, check those out. Much better way to play fantasy. Highly recommend. All right, let me remind you, before we wrap up here, Better's Last Stand, the pregame show for high school football coming up next. WKKX will have Wheeling Central and Union Local. WVLY will have John Marshall in Marietta and Parkersburg South in Wheeling Park from Wheeling Island Stadium. We'll be right here on WatchdogNetwork.com. Can stream all the games at WatchdogNetwork.com. That's going to do it for us here on show 141 of Better's Last Stand. Again, BLS_PRP is where you can find everything at the Pine Room Studios. Watchdog Network WV. Look for the whole high school football schedule. Mountaineer football tomorrow. Cleveland Browns football next week. We had Mike Florio on the show as well as Kelsey Russo from the Cleveland Browns this past week. So go back and check those out. Those archive podcasts at WatchdogNetwork.com, PineRoomStudios.com. Wherever you can go to find Pine Room and Watchdog stuff, you won't be disappointed. All right, that's going to do it for us. Best of luck in your wagers here on College Football Week 1. Better's Last Stand 141 in the books. High School Football Pregame Show coming up next right here on the Watchdog Network. We will see you here momentarily. Have a great evening and best of luck.